Well, okay, folks, let's get started. I'm Roy Schmidt. You are in session 136. The title is Supporting the Family, Cash Incentivized LARCs, which are long-active reversible contraceptives. And I must admit that when I was given this assignment, I had no idea what a LARC was, other than something that sometimes you went off on, you know. They were kidding me this morning, and they said, you don't know anything about contraceptives? And I said, well, there's my 17 kids out here. You know, you tell me. But anyhow, this I'm really looking forward to learning more about this topic from Representative George R. Compton. Dr. Compton has a PhD from UCLA in economics. He taught economics for 10 years at BYU and now does state government work in public utility regulation. This session goes from 11:30, which is about 11:32 right now. And we're scheduled to end at 12:30, and then there will be the hour and a half lunch break following. So we'll get going, and afterward, I'm sure that George will be interested in answering any questions that you might happen to have. So, Dr. Compton.
Quick clarification. I did teach at BYU 10 years part-time. I was already working in utility regulation, which is then my career. I wasn't on tenure track. Good news, I wasn't denied tenure. The bad news is I wasn't on tenure track, but anyway, I want to make that clarification. This is kind of the golden hour, you might say. I looked at least three other sessions I would love to be at myself. So I appreciate at least having these four people here. I was just within Bob Reese's session, and maybe if you all hold hands and get in rhythm, it would come out better. A year ago I didn't know what a LARC was, and if anybody would have said, I didn't go to a session, much less give a session on contraceptives, it would be totally absurd. But what got me into this a year ago, the session that disturbed me the most was number 311, hookup culture and the collapse of religion in America in the West. The most troubling statistic was that 76% of Americans now engage in premarital sex. So with all that premarital sex going on, there's got to be an awful lot of unintended pregnancies.
Closer?
Okay.
Closer to the mic.
It's kind of noisy.
Yeah.
Just pull it toward
you. Yeah, so with all that non-marital sex, you have to figure there's got to be a lot of non-marital babies. So it's a problem.
Here.
I can just kind of hold it.
Well, I'll migrate.
Yeah. Actually, get close enough, I can just talk.
I can move as well.
What kind of kept me in? Should I just come down?
It's better to use the mic.
Yeah, the mic's better. Yeah.
So
you have to use the mic for that, yeah.
You remember the Des Moines report 50 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
That it had its 50th anniversary, and a number of articles came out, this year. So that kind of feels interesting. Where they said 24% of the blacks kids were coming out of families where they weren't married. Now it's close to 70%. So it's a huge problem. But then the other thing that cemented my interest was this book came out, Generation Unbound. Got a lot of good reviews, and the subtitle is Drifting into Sex and Parenthood Without Marriage, which is, that's my subject. I'll do one more thing, preliminary, and that's give you the original title to this, my presentation. Cash Incentivized LARCs with a pro-children, pro-life, pro-marriage, income equalizing, and not surprisingly, inviting of religious opposition. That was the hook. since the sentence was already hooked, they didn't have to have that last part in the title that you, which you read. But at the, basically the end of my session, I'll go into how to deal with that religious opposition. For some statistics, over 40% of American births are non-marital. Over 30% of children under 18 live in a single-parent household. The poverty rate for female-headed households, 45%. 1 in 5 pregnancies end in abortion, and 2 in 5 of unintended pregnancies. And teenage pregnancy is 4 times as prevalent in the U.S. as in the European Union, which is bizarre. Why are we in this state? You know, we're all familiar with declining religiosity. But there's been a reduced social stigma for unmarried pregnancy. Remember, we talked about shotgun weddings and those kinds of things back in the day. As of 2002, only 45% of Americans thought it was morally acceptable to have a child out of wedlock. Today, it's 61%. Another thing is reduced marriage rates for those beneath the upper middle class. The upper middle class, they're still marrying like before. It's just below that that people aren't marrying. But people, and even when they do marry, they're marrying later. So easier access to contraceptives, easy access to abortion, easier, better, you know, more effective treatment for venereal diseases, and then no fault and easier divorcing. Now there's more single people out there, the more single people having sex. And the focus I'm going to have, it's stated in the abstract, which is, should the government pay for larks to the point where larks are the norm as opposed to the exception? That's the question, that's the thesis, and my thesis is yes. And by the way, just to let you all know, I may be one of 5 Republicans in this building right now. Very good. I came out seeing the libertarian end of it. I went to my first National Review cruise just last week in Alaska. I took my notes here for this session and this National Review thing just kind of make me feel more comfortable, I guess. Okay, so what to do about this? Basically, Elizabeth Sawhill, she says, as long as people are going to be having sex, what we want to do is try to reduce the number of unwanted pregnancies. So how do you do that? Well, the first thing that comes to mind is contraceptives. Well, 52% of people who have sex don't use contraceptives at all, even and people who don't want kids. Why don't they use a contraceptive? Well, one is that sometimes they start with, like, you know, pill, but after a time it messes with their hormones or something like that. In other cases, the fact you have to have a prescription, you have to see the doctor, you know, your prescription runs out, you know, you haven't refilled your prescription. The other reason, people who, even when contraceptives are used, which is the other 42% of the time, people either don't use them correctly or just, you know, in the passion of the moment, they really wanted to use a concept but just didn't do it. Then the other thing that's brought out is that if you engage with standard contraceptives, there's a 63% chance within 5 years you're going to have a kid. Just the way things work out. So, given the flaws of conventional contraceptives, what's the answer? And that's the lark. Yeah, once it's done, it's done. It's there for 7 to 10 years.
So is that like an implant?
Okay, and there are actually two kinds of LARCs. One is the intrauterine device, and the other one is the implant that you plug in the arm. There are two forms of contraception. One is to prevent fertilization. And by the way, I'm a 70-year-old male. I mean, a lot of you people, you know, you women probably know about this than I do, but anyway. The other way is to prevent the fertilized egg from attaching to the uterus. Those are the two forms of contraception. Okay. Now, the second form, preventing a fertilized egg from attaching to the uterus, that could be construed as an abortion. An abortion is defined as terminating pregnancy. Contraception is preventing pregnancy. Now, so the question is, when does pregnancy take place? In some tradition, has pregnancy taken place with conception? But that turns out to be a minority position. The medical field and legal field says that pregnancy does not take place until the fertilized egg attaches to the uterus. So if the LARC acts to, in some instances, to prevent the attachment, that's a legitimate contraception and not an abortion. Another point of view is that the spirit doesn't enter the womb until what's called quickening. Remember that term?
Which is become?
When quickening, that's when you first feel something, you know, the baby moving. So that's, you know, so you look at these different positions, and I conclude that I would be comfortable using a LARC and not feeling I'm promoting abortion. Now the church, as far as I can tell, is silent on when pregnancy takes place. Out of the handbook, it says the church opposes elective abortion for personal or social convenience. And with three narrow exceptions, you know what they are. Members must not submit to, perform, arrange for, pay for, consent to, or encourage an abortion. The scriptural reference given is the Lord commanded, thou shalt not kill, nor do anything like unto it. So there's that. The problem is that, you know, when the unmarried sex, and even married sex, we've all been, well, not all of us, but most of the graduate students and so forth, and having babies would be, we'll say, a major inconvenience. So pretty much everybody at some point in their marriage career practices contraception. But the problem is that it's not done consistently and intelligently. And so this is why we have so many unwanted children. Given then the advantages of the LARCs, you know, how do we get more people to use LARCs? The standard approach is, you know, health classes in schools and so forth, making them available through insurance. I think Obamacare requires the insurer to provide contraceptions. And now, I should have done my homework, but since the LARC is the most expensive form of contraception, I don't know if Obamacare requires the LARC if a person asks for the LARC. The other, of course, is to actually have the government subsidize, and that is my thesis. In my mind, the government should actually. And I threw out a number: pay $2,500 for someone to have the LARC installed, and then have it removed for free with the person that's ready to have a kid. And be ready to have a kid isn't necessarily mean that they have to be married, but they have to know, hey, this is what we want to do. First of all, before I get into that, what are the advantages of this kind of contraception? One is that the woman can can, you know, when she has a baby, it's when she wants to have a baby. Not only the timing, but, you know, with whom is going to be the father. The other thing is from the point of view of the baby, there's been a lot of studies lately, you know, nature, nurture, about IQ. There's, you know, IQ is actually starts to develop in the womb. And they have the early childhood development where an upper middle class kid who will hear like something like 9 million more words than somebody from the underclass. And with that kind of a vocabulary deficiency, you know, how's the kid gonna catch up? So the other thing is, so the kids, they have better prenatal care if it's the planned pregnancy, better early child development, better, following, I don't advocate what they call helicopter parenting, but the kids just have the advantages. You know, they're in clubs, they play sports, they get read to. I read an article that some professor in Australia is advocating, saying that you shouldn't rape your kids because it puts other kids at disadvantage. Kids who don't have parents that read to them. But anyway, so there's just there's no comparison for the kids in general. The other thing that happens oftentimes is if the male in the house is not the father, a whole lot more likelihood of abuse. And then from the point of society at large, there's tremendous savings where the kid has parents to pay for them instead of being on welfare. The other thing is that if a woman has a kid, how she can have a job. And if the father is responsible enough to want to pay for the kid, he's going to be working instead of going to school when he may be in the early 20s when he should be further his education, so in fact he can be more productive later on in his life. So there are these definite social, personal, and child development advantages of being a wanted kid in a household. Well, let me back up just for a minute, something I forgot. given the problem, what are the solutions offered less tangible? From the conservative point of view, they say we want to have a countercultural revolution, really what it boils down to. And on the liberal side, it's we need to make males more attractive in terms of their employment prospects. You read how in the ghetto, women don't, they don't want to marry because none of them, they don't see the males as being providers. Obviously, we aren't going to have a counter cultural revolution right away, nor are we going to get a whole bunch of males to be in the mode of being adequate economic providers. So this is why people say, hey, what could be a short term solution that might work, and that's where the marks come in. Another thing about besides the effectiveness of Marx is like the failure of Marx is like 1/120th of 1%. I mean, basically, once the Marx is there, it's there. And actually, it's a new technology that you can have a radio. You can send a radio signal to turn it on and off. So. Yeah, it's pretty amazing in that respect. Okay. I mentioned the $2,500, and is this an idea whose time has come and gone? I was at UCLA and living in Venice, which back in the late 60s, early 70s, when the Moynihan Report came out, was, you might say, a transition neighborhood, a lot of minorities. And I thought even, I was an economist at UCLA, I think, hey, you know, they ought to give these kids $1,000 to have an IUD implanted. So I had that idea 50 years ago. It turns out Kansas did something like that, or proposed it. Like, there was like $500 and $50 a year to keep it in. Some schools around the country did it, sometimes without parental notification, installed Larson into these kids. And this all taking place in the early 90s, and a whole bunch of states proposed legislation, but they were defeated. So on a statewide level, it never happened, like I say, back in the early 90s. And there are two principal sources of opposition. One was the blacks. Back then, you know, this is before Hispanics, frankly. And the main problem with, you know, the Moynihan Report focused on the blacks, and so the focus of Larks would have been for blacks. And the blacks said, hey, you know, hey, this is racial genocide. We don't want anything to do with it. So politically, it was politically incorrect, you might say, before there was such a term as political incorrectness. Yeah, and then the other side was from the religion point of view, which is, hey, you know, give these kids, basically giving the kid a lark, basically you're saying, hey, you know, you're going to have sex. So we'll install this thing. So it gives the kids the wrong signal, you might say. Then I read an article just by a National Review guy just a week ago on the poverty problem. And what he's saying is the poverty problem is going to get a whole lot worse because we have so many kids not having parents. And his point of view was that before, when we had racial segregation, there'd be somebody in your neighborhood who maybe would have bought a store or something like that, and would have regular jobs and you could earn benefit from it. But now with, when I say economic segregation, they're totally isolated. They don't have any kind of a peer mentoring or you know, to help them along. Anyway, on this cruise, one reason I went to this cruise was so I could talk to these authors, and they sat down, they sit at their table. And so I went and talked to this guy and said, hey, what about Larks? His concern, in National Review, you have traditional conservatives, Judeo-Christian conservatives, and libertarians. And you can tell the libertarians are the ones who have the girlfriends. And, you know, they're at the table, they have different last names, and that was some cases. But anyway, this guy, who was actually East Indian, said his concern was a further severing of the connection between sex and procreation, which adds to the weakening of what does it mean to be married. So that was, so even he was, you know, he was familiar with the idea of Larks, but he didn't put it in his article as to how to deal with this emerging increased poverty due to kids not having fathers in their home. So anyway, those are the objections. Where are we now? Turns out just a month ago, an article came out in New York Times, and actually my daughter knew it. One of my daughters knew I was working with this, and she had to run up that article and stuff. She said that to me, so I had two exposures to this article. Anyway, Colorado had an experiment that just basically wrapping up, and where something like, I have the figure here. Yeah, 20% of the Colorado women used these marks. Anyway, teenage birth rate fell 40%. Abortions fell by about 40%. It says the changes were particularly pronounced in the poorest areas. In 2009, half of first births occurred before age 21. By 2014, half of first births weren't until age 24. So tremendous improvement there. Says the Colorado State Health Department estimated that for every dollar spent on long-acting birth control, it saved $5.85 for the state's Medicaid program, which covers more than three-fourths of the teenage pregnancies. So, and you know, this is, you know, the port, this is eastern Colorado, on the, it's kind of like, you know, I'd say Appalachia on the prairie. These aren't blacks. There may be Hispanics, but the fact that the problem of unwanted children is no longer a black problem makes it more politically palatable to do these kinds of things, which Colorado has done. In terms of the why, just to give you some idea how it could be more widespread, in France, 23% of the women of that age have IUDs. Also, about that same percentage in Norway, 40% of the children, of the women in of childbearing age in China have marks. So it can be a widely used thing. If the incentives are there, and if the acceptance of the culture is there. Answering the question, should the government pay for this? One objection is, like, okay, I'm 74 years old, I'm not going to use a lark. Why should I have to pay for the lark? Well, this is a Colorado experiment. Came out. We do have Medicaid, and if people use LARCs, we're going to save almost $6 in Medicaid dollars for every dollar that we spend on the LARCs. So small government. We're trying to have efficient governments. You make that argument, but the better argument might be, I don't believe in. I believe in contraceptives per se for the right people, but in my own family, I think that my kids, and I'm just thinking rhetorically here, because all of my kids are all my daughters are well married, but it's discriminatory. You know, why pay $2,500 in my proposal plus a free removal for people when other kids don't need them and don't want them? So so there's that problem. So what I've concocted, and the fun thing about sunstone is you can be totally blue sky. You say, hey, why don't you say, give a woman, say, $3,000, which is $2,500 plus the $500 removal cost, if she proves that she's had her first baby after being married, or conception after being married. Now, question, do you think that could be at all politically palatable for maybe a hatch to introduce that? This is something, the nice thing about politics is they want to have something. I worked in the state government, I came to Utah in 1976 and worked on the hatch campaign, so I kind of went into politics. And the idea that of having something that everybody could somehow benefit from and see an error to. So that's my twist, that actually provide an incentive, the appropriate incentive for the particular person. Recently, if you follow Senator Lee from here from Utah, is proposing, what is it, $2,500 a year? You're familiar with that? For people who have kids. For every kid that they have in their household up until whatever age, maybe 18 or something like that. I personally think it's not a very smart idea. One thing would be very extremely expensive. The conservative, the main extreme conservatives aren't backing him. But the argument he gives is pretty hard to argue against, which is you have four couples. Three of them have children, one of them doesn't. When those four couples retire, who's going to be paying for their Social Security? It's the kids of those other three couples. So what Senator Lee says is that people are making a major sacrifice to raise kids who will be the Social Security taxpayers in the next generation. And because of that sacrifice, they should get some kind of an economic rebate, so to speak. Okay, the morality, the basis of my advocacy is for the children. The idea of sparing children, in my mind, a permanent handicap is worth you know, whatever incentives, whatever policy we have to put in place to in order to accomplish that. You know, they tell you to practice in advance, and you know your timing. We're way early. I will read my summary, and then have any questions or comments. Did you have time? Up until this year, I thought I had, you know, made of steel. I did most of Tiffanogas last year, up to the, what's it called, Emerald Basin. Would have made it all the way, but my knees wouldn't have got me back down. I have a twin brother who's 23 years younger than I am. So, but anyway, this year I caught pneumonia that went into chronic bronchitis. Now I have asthma. It's not fair that a person should develop it. Not having any of these respiratory things to my age. So I kind of have congestion. Okay, many see marriage as a failed institution, abandoned by an expanding portion of society where it counts the most, i.e. prior to giving birth to infant children. Widespread adoption of LARCs constitutes a doable, practical measure that would avoid much of the tragedy surrounding unwanted pregnancies in the context of the mother not being married. These tragedies are abortions and children doomed in life owing to early developmental deficiencies and having to grow up in a depraved environment. Society needs to adopt effective approaches to discouraging unwanted pregnancies while at the same time being sensitive to the aspirations of those who wish the traditional path. Again, my thesis is that to pay what it takes to have it be the norm, but also, as I say, be sensitive to an alternative for where that's not going to be appropriate. And thanks for coming here. I have a 25-year-old, I mean, I have a 4-year-old computer that died last night. And I was going to make 25 handouts. You know, Bob Reese says he's old enough to be pretty PowerPoint, but then he just needs somebody to set it up, and then he wants to set up, he did the PowerPoint. Well, I'm also pretty PowerPoint, and I'm not a teacher, so by heck, I'm going to stay pretty PowerPoint. But I did make, before my computer died, I didn't make five copies of my handout. Sure enough, we have about five people here, so I'll dig out, you know, if you're interested. I do have some citations and stuff, if you're interested.
Before you ask the question, could you come up and use this mic because it is being recorded.
Okay. Do you know how many states Medicaid covers the use of LARCs? Or is it a common practice? Is it just in Colorado? And the other question, do you have any idea what the charge that Planned Parenthood gives for installation of a LARC? That is to say the IUD.
No, Colorado had some kind of a special, somebody sponsored this. So they had a special fence. So Colorado would be unique to my knowledge. But basically, 95% of what I know about LARCs, I was in this presentation. Yeah, I've had, well, I won't. But yeah, I'm sorry. Go ahead and you might Google that. It's amazing nowadays what we can do with Google. It's expensive enough, and the other. Well, okay. Obviously, Obamacare passed with zero Republican support. I wouldn't be surprised if Obamacare will cover LARCs. If it had been. Bipartisan, I would have been surprised if it would have covered LARCs because of the expense.
I think it must, because that was the question in the Hobby Lobby. They specifically, I think, IUDs. And so that seems to imply to me that that would have been covered under whatever plan they had, which would have been compliant.
And that is true, that they are covered. The issue is in states like Utah that haven't done the Medicare expansion.
Right.
There's this whole range of people who don't qualify for the subsidized plans and aren't covered by Medicaid either.
So it's the most needy. It's covered, but then again, it says it's not. Yeah.
Any other questions? Come on up.
Actually, you wanted to. Maybe we can ask you a
few questions. I don't know the answer to these questions, but have you thought about the impact on demography if LARCs become widespread enough in the U.S. that they had an impact in our rate of out-of-wedlock births? That doesn't necessarily mean those births will happen later in marriage. They might just not happen at all. And I know several of the European countries that have made access to birth control subsidized are also some of those countries that have dramatically declining birth rates. And, you know, it's a real issue in countries like Italy, for example, where, you know, the average, you know, birth rate per woman is down about 1.5.
They aren't reproducing by a long time.
Right. So it's possible that this would have the same impact in the U.S.
Yeah, I mean, we talk about, as it is, the browning of America in any event. And I'm a native of Los Angeles County, and it's past tense.
Mm-hmm.
The other aspect, and in my original title was income equalizing.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, more poor, you know, the fewer poor people there are, the higher the average, the higher the average income becomes, and just, you know, it shrinks the poverty problem.
Just by shrinking the number of poor people, but that would have a side effect of this demographic impact of our country. Anyway, so my other question, and again, I'm not sure that you would know about this, but what the impact would be on the rate of condom usage. And the advantage of condoms over LARCs is that they are also disease prevention. And I'm concerned that, you know, teenagers in particular thinking, I don't have to worry about getting pregnant because I have an IUD or I have an implant, might then be less incentivized to use a condom for disease prevention.
That's obviously true. Actually, one of the things I did have here is that they did find that sex education didn't increase promiscuity.
Right.
So that was, you're familiar with that? So that was kind of good news.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that, so much, I mean, a lot of it is even oral nowadays, is sexually transmitted diseases. I think that, it would have to have some effect, but hopefully, with modern medical science, trying to be on top of all these things, it wouldn't be too deleterious, I might say. Yeah, what's your profession? What are your exposure to these? How can you know all these things?
I'm a nerd.
Are you a nurse?
No, not a nurse. A nerd.
I'm a nerd too. But I've actually had 3 letters that are published in the Wall Street Journal. But one on immigration and one on education reform. This is the last thing I thought I'd be interested in. But I read the whole book.
Mm-hmm.
It's a problem. I mean, put it this way, if you don't know this is a problem, you're not awake.
Any other questions? If not, we can adjourn early and go enjoy lunch and be back for the next session beginning at 2:00. George, thank you so very much for your presentation.
Thank you.
I've enjoyed it.
Just about.